Accession number 19938, Reel 2.
Mr. Rollin, Reel 2.
So I returned to Belgium in October 1953. I was given a 1 month leave. We had to return all our uniform, and I was then sent back to the unit in the Belgian Air Force, where I served for another 4 years. And after that, I became a Belgian gendarme, a Belgian police of national police officer, and that is the rest of my career.
You told me at the beginning how there was this emphasis on it being a crusade against communism. Did that mean anything to you?
I think it meant something to all of us. I think we had to have a purpose to volunteer to go to Korea. For some of them it was adventure, for some of us it was... The purpose was to go and fight communism. Did it really mean anything to me? I was that young, 16, 17 years old. I suppose so, but on the other hand, we were also told that these South Koreans having been invaded, and I could understand invasion. Invasion meaning, you know, We had just finished being invaded by the Germans, and I suppose that maybe that helped a bit as well. But yes, I think it was, for me, was an idealism of anti-communism, yes.
So were you interested in politics when you were a teenager?
Absolutely not, but my grandfather was a very staunch socialist. Anti-communist, but very much socialist. And I suppose I must have picked it up from the family, I suppose. Yeah, but no, I've never done any politics as such.
You said that there was that occasion when the Chinese managed to get into your trench.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there in the trench when they got in?
Absolutely, yes. I was there. It was, must have been about 11 o'clock at night or something like that, pitch dark, very cold, and we had had a few alerts the previous nights. The Chinese were always trying to infiltrate. They had dug tunnels to try to reach our position and to try to gain foot on the hills where that we were trying to protect. Yes, I was there, and that is one of the rare, very rare occasions where I used my bayonet, and it's not a very pretty experience. I'd rather shoot somebody than kill him with a bayonet.
You mean you stuck your bayonet into one person?
Yes. Yes.
Was that because he would have killed...
Well, yes, of course he was there. We were positioned about 5-6 meters from each other along the trench. And one of the Chinese jumped in between the two of us. If he had turned to me, to my friend... He would have killed him, but he turned to me, so there was nothing else I could do but to stick my bayonet in him. Yes, I did.
Was he killed immediately?
Yes, he was, yes. Yes.
So you stuck it through his heart or something?
I suppose so, yes. I tried to aim for his chest anyway, so I suppose I must have. But he was dead. He was dead.
Did he also have a bayonet?
Yes, they had these very long rifles with these very long bayonets on top, and... It really scared me, But I was supposed quicker. I suppose he didn't expect to be that near somebody when he jumped into the trench.
What did the Chinese soldiers look like close at hand?
Smaller than I expected. They looked larger, but I suppose that was their padded clothing. They all had some sort of a hat on that with reaching to over their ears and some, I don't know, a soft hat, I remember. And they had some, do you call them puttees, you know, shoes with bandages on their legs. Yes, that was it. Very dark, very khaki, but dark khaki colored. Yeah, that's all I remember. But in the confusion, I suppose, everybody was really excited. The adrenaline was flowing. Yeah.
Was that the only time you came into close quarters with the Chinese?
We had been very close quarters with Chinese during patrols as well, but not that close. I mean, we disrupted some patrols from them when they passed by us. We might have being as close as, I don't know, 4 or 5 meters from them without them noticing us. But never face to face. No, that's the first time ever.
Which month do you think this incident where the Chinese got into the trench occurred?
This was, must have been March 1953. March, it either end of March, beginning of April. No, well, March time, end of March, yes, I suppose so.
What did you think of the Chinese as an enemy?
Well, I suppose when we arrived there, we joked about them, you know, the little Chinese, but there were so many of them. And we were told that they were very fanatical. They were very fanatics. We were told, but I don't know if that is true, that they either had to fight and die for their fatherland or being killed by their commanding officer if they refused to fight. But you know, all this propaganda, I don't know about all that. Yes, I think I had certainly a lot of respect, but I thought they were very devious with all their tunnel digging and things like that. So, but at that, you know, when you're 17, I don't think you think a lot about these things.
And do you think that how did their equipment compare with yours? Who had the superior equipment?
I think we had very good equipment. First of all, our battalion was equipped with Belgian rifles from the FN, the Fabrique Nationale, and they were called the Baudouin rifle. It was the first time that they were issued, and they were made under the rule of our previous king, Baudouin, and they had the big B with the car, and that's why we called them a Baudouin. Unfortunately, these rifles were so good and so precise that very often during the winter they would jam because being too cold or not working properly, and we preferred the little American carbine, the Underwood, which was a very good weapon at short distance, I suppose. But we were officially issued with the Belgian FN rifle. Now, as far as the Chinese, they had what we called a burb gun, which was some sort of an automatic thing with a drum on top, and it, when it was used, it looked like somebody burping, or it sounded like somebody burping, but it was a rapid fire. I don't know about all the rest. I don't think they had very much armed vehicles that they didn't have, and we were certainly, or when I say we, the United Nations was certainly superior when it came to air craft. Yes, we were certainly, although they had the Russian MiGs, but I think we were superior than they were, qua weapons.
And what did you think of the other United Nations allies?
I must admit, we were a very, very small battalion, of course. You know, we only had about 600 men at one time in Korea. Although normally you have four companies to a battalion, we only had three companies and a heavy weapon section, if you wish. So we were very small, but we were always... We were very close to the French. We had served under the British under British command, where of course we were always pampered, according to friends that I spoke to, because I've never personally served under the Brits. The Americans, of course, I think they liked us a lot, and they protected us as much as they could, but they also send us to in some sort of tricky situation sometimes. No, generally speaking, the Turks, the Greek, even the Thai that were there, the Brits, the Americans, all these people, the Australians, we never had any problem at all, because if we went anywhere, you could always stop at any company, at any unit, and being fed, and nobody would cause you any trouble at all. I must admit, it was a very friendly atmosphere, allied atmosphere, let's call it that way.
Did you see anything of the South Korean civilians?
We civilians, wherever we were, we did not. Like the iron, I talked to you about the Iron Triangle, these three cities, they were completely wiped out. There was nothing left. We didn't see any civilians, but we had some South Korean soldiers in our battalion working with us, fighting with us. I never had any contact, when I say never, very rarely contact with South Korean civilians. Maybe on our travels with the battalion commander, we would stop at a village and buy some fruit or one of the other things, but we never had very close contact with the civilian population.
What were these South Korean soldiers like?
Oh, fantastic, because they'd rather be with us than in their own battalion. They were better equipped. Well, we equipped them better, we fed them better, I suppose they preferred to be with us than with the thing, but they were very, very helpful, of course. A lot of them were ammunition carriers, or some of them were translators, some of them were intelligence. These people in the company, they carried heavy loads for us. Some of them were cooks, and we had quite a few people working with us.
What did you think of the living conditions in
Korea? Living conditions. Well, if you can call it living conditions, freezing cold. I remember once being on a observation post, and that was a 2-hour stint. And I was dressed, I must have had 4 or 5 layers of clothes on, and I was laying in the snow in a little excavation there on top of the hill, trying to see what was coming on from the other side. And after 2 hours, when I got up, my clothes were frozen to the soil. You could hear them rip when I when I stood up. No, then we stayed in, we slept in foxholes, later on in prefabricated bunkers, and then when we went to the second echelon or just behind the lines, we had tents and with these big stoves, and it was really a miserable life. I must admit, when I sometimes when I sat there and I thought to myself, I'm sure I must have taken the wrong train somewhere, you know, from one place to another, arriving here in Korea. But all in all, yes, very good experience, and an experience that I do not regret having lived.
Why don't you regret it?
It helped me in further in my career. When I left, I was, let's say, when I came back, let's say I was 17, getting on to 18. And I think this 1 year crusade or expedition or war, whatever you want to call it, aged me mentally, and I think prepared me very much for later obstacles in life. It never gave me any advantages, nothing promotion-wise, nothing like that, but the mentality I had was certainly not the mentality of an 18-year-old, but a 25-year-old, and I've always kept that advantage, I think.
Did you have any lasting effects from your physical or mental health point of view?
I can't say anything about my mental health. I suppose it's all right, but physically I was, nothing wrong with me physically. Everything is fine. I'm lucky.
Did you have any nightmares as a consequence?
No. I must admit, I had never any nightmares. I was never stressed. I was never, no. I've lived that period of my life, and I suppose because I volunteered, I was not obliged to do it. I suppose it helped me put that aside and think about it in a nice way instead of in a difficult way.
People sometimes question me about the accuracy of the memories that I am recording. Do you think your own memories that you've given me of the Second World War and Korea are accurate?
They are certainly as accurate as I can remember, and if the dates are wrong by a month or a couple of days, that is possible, but for the rest of my memory is still perfectly all right, yes.